Please be advised that this interview contains some language which may not be appropriate for all audiences.
There was a Comic-Con. It was I think 2013. And actually, the poster that you see behind me right here, I had designed like this, almost like this Where's Waldo style poster. And they gave them out. And I think there's only, I don't know, a few thousand of them. But what was really cool is I was just kind of like walking around Comic-Con and you'd see people with their totes and that regular show poster sticking out, and like they literally just had no idea that I was the one that drew it, and I was just kind of like a character in my own poster, just kind of like lurking around with watching everybody walk around with my poster in their backpack. So that was really cool.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the Regular Show Wiki's 15th anniversary interviews. Today's guest was Regular Show's primary character designer, contributing to almost every episode from the show's first to seventh seasons. He also worked briefly as a storyboard artist, boarding Slam Dunk and the Terror Tales of the Park story, Death Metal Crash Pit. Please welcome Ben Adams.
Hello.
So we'll start from the very beginning. What was it that made you want to work in animation?
Oh man, that's a hard one to pin down because I feel like from such a young age I was kind of steeped in it. As far back as like the early 90s, my dad would take me to like Spike and Mike's Sick and Twisted Animation Festivals. We had just like a plethora of animated TV shows, ranging from The Simpsons to Beavis and Butthead to Ren and Stimpy, that always piqued my interest. And then simultaneously, when I was like, say about 13 years old, I met a professional animator named Joe Pearson, and he had his own TV show called Captain Simian and the Space Monkeys. And at the same time, he was directing music videos for Pearl Jam, and like he was doing backgrounds for Walt Disney, and like it just blew my mind. And he lived in Venice Beach and like went to the beach every day. And I was like, whatever I have to do to be like that guy, that's what I'm gonna do. So it was kind of just took off from there.
So, how did you get your start in the industry and get on to doing Regular Show?
So JG and I had actually met in college, and we shared a cube briefly for probably a little less than a semester, but I was a freshman and he was a senior, and something happened where he got kicked out of his cube. It was some kind of a clerical error, and he had to move into our cube with had like two other freshmen at the time, and we were all just kind of like just rambunctious. And at that time we were doing these things called 48 hour film festivals, where everyone would try to like make a film in 48 hours. And just so happened that that year he made two in the AM PM, and it was awesome. So, and then as like as time progressed, I kept a school, kept making films, and then he actually offered me an internship on The Marvelous Misadventures of Flapjack. I was a storyboard revisionist, and so just kind of like the natural evolution of that kind of like career path is you go for a storyboard position. So I actually tested as a storyboard artist for Regular Show, but there was something in my test that he thought that I could handle character designs. And I had never done character designs professionally, but I didn't have any other work lined up at the moment. So I was just like, yeah, I'll do it for sure. Just everything kind of snowballed from there. So it was really cool. And I've always had like, total reverence for JG. Like, I always felt like I was like the younger kid looking up to the older kid, kind of like, he's the coolest. And he is, so it wasn't hard. And just, I've always had nothing but, just love and respect for the guy.
So, as a character designer, what exactly did that role entail or consist of?
Yeah, so my first introduction into any episode is always just a list. And It's just a list of everything that needs to be designed in an episode, and it can range in between, anywhere from 35 designs to 120 designs. It all depends on like how intense an episode is. And then shortly after, we get the storyboard and animatic, and I kind of come through and compile all the information provided in the storyboard. And then from there, I just every day it's a 1 week turnaround, 1 week per episode. So it's like it has to be really fast and really snappy. So from there, I'll take all the information that I can. Like I'll usually do like a turn of the characters. Sometimes it can be a full, 5 point turn, or just like a three quarters front, three quarter rear. And most of the time, there's special poses involved and little things here and there. So. Checking on my dog. He seems fine.
So was the role collaborative in any way? Because I've seen some of the like model sheets that you've posted online that have said like approved by JG or approved by Paula.
There's a lot of back and forth. Like, I'm taking information from what's in the boards, and then I'm also trying to match JG's sensibilities and kind of distill that into the designs. And then from there's back and forth between me, him, and the art director of like, oh, I think we could tweak this, make this better, or make this dumber, So it all depends.
Was there any design where you had to do some major changes because of like standards and practices or?
I mean, standards and practices is a thing in our industry where everything is kind of, gone through and kind of nerfed. But yeah, I mean, there's been a fair amount. Like the one that comes to mind immediately is Meet Your Maker. I had to do all these like hot dogs with beanies and like coats and stuff, and a fair amount of them came back. That I needed to change them because they look too phallic, which is just kind of funny because it's like hot dogs with beanies. It's just kind of like naturally happens, like unintentionally. So yeah, there was a lot of just different styles of beanies and hats that I had to try to like make that work.
Despite that, I think a few designs maybe still like passed under the radar and made it in.
Yeah, they always do somehow. For the record, unintentionally not trying to like make them look too phallic, by the way. It was just like hot dogs wearing beanies and jackets.
Now, so obviously your primary role on the show was character designer, but as you mentioned, you did do a storyboard test at the start. And you did get the chance to board a couple of episodes in season three. So, how did they come about?
Yeah, I can't exactly remember how it happened. I want to say there was like a bit of a gap between season two and season three. And season two was slowly starting to meet up with the start date of season three, but there was like a little bit of wiggle room in there. And every season we tried to do like a Halloween themed show. And so there was like a little bit of room in there for like a freelance board. And I was just kind of pining to do one, and it just so happened that my good friend Andreas Loff was trying to get up from revisions to boarding, and I was like, this would be the perfect opportunity for us to like do one together, and it ended up working out pretty good. And then they offered us to do another one, and I think I had gotten it out of my system, and I was enjoying character designs at that moment, and so it just kind of happened naturally and fluidly. And yeah, no, it was awesome.
So what was the creative process like with working on those boards?
So the process is like this. At the handout, you're given basically a rough outline of what the story is. Actually, I don't want to say rough, it's like finalized outline of first, second, and third act. And it's basically bullet points of where the story is going. And it's a very board-driven show. So nothing is like scripted. So essentially, you're kind of taking the beats that are given in the outline and just kind of pitching ideas throughout, but like also tethering like the main story points throughout the board. And just about every 2 weeks you're checking in and pitching and getting notes. And the great thing about the show is that it's not like very strict. It's not like everything has to be pretty and pristine. So you can sketch out a bunch of crazy different ideas, and there's a lot of back and forth, and you don't feel like you've killed too many of your, creative babies in the process.
So obviously the first one that you did, Death Metal Crash Pit, you introduced the world to Skull Punch.
Oh, the band?
Yeah. And obviously regular show is filled with pop culture references, so I'm just curious to know if they were based on anyone in particular or
Yeah, we didn't have like a particular I'm drawing a blank on the documentary with like there's like three British guys in a metal band.
Final Tap?
Yes, Spinal Tap. Yeah, so I would say it's like kind of loosely spoofing them, but no, it's not like aimed directly at anybody in particular.
And speaking of characters that were introduced in your episodes, Slam Dunk debuted the God of Basketball.
Yeah, that was awesome because I mean, really, we had no intention of it being anyone in particular. And when we found out that Carl Weathers was voicing the God of Basketball, we were really, really pumped. And it was just a really fun episode to do, and to have him come in, and then like also have Filter. One of Filter's songs in there. It was really rad.
On the topic of that episode, there's clearly a big basketball influence. Was that something that came from your own life? Would you say that you're into sports?
I mean, I grew up playing sports a little bit, but no, I don't watch sports. I don't watch football. I don't watch basketball. Occasionally I'll go to a baseball game. But no, it's just not, it's not one of my interests. So, but yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, it came pretty easy. Like the rules of the game and all that was something I'm aware of. And yeah, I've never been like a team sports guy. Like I grew up skateboarding and, like water skiing and stuff. Like I just never really liked coaches. So, but like, yeah, no, I get the gist. Like, I've played the game before and pick up basketball games and stuff. Like, wasn't hard.
Or was there anything else personal from your own life which you might have put into these episodes?
Yeah, I think that's like a part of the art form is like you're not trying to be too specific and get things in from your life because obviously it's a cartoon and like the story comes from the characters and of course things from your life and your experience are gonna kind of leak into those moments and how you handle them. That's all I can really say. I mean, otherwise, well, I mean, we're just trying to stick to the script and then like make the show that we think is going to be the best, really. Yeah.
Back onto your work as a character designer, what would you say are some of the biggest challenges which you had to face and overcome in that role?
I think just timing is the first one because you really have to just manage your time well, and there's never enough time to do things. And then, of course, I think maybe one of the more challenging aspects of the job is when let's say you have 50 designs, but then like five of them are crowd shots, and those could easily take up hours of your day doing. So it really is about just kind of staying behind the eight ball. I think for me, I always tried to do the hardest designs first. That way I was never stressing towards the end of the week. I genuinely had a lot of fun designing the show. So it never felt like, it was taking years off of my life or anything. Like I was always generally pretty stoked to do it. One of the more charming aspects of the show is that I think it looks like a show that you and your shithead friend would make. You know what I mean? Like it's charming in its naivete, like it's like one of those shows that look approachable. It's not trying to be groundbreaking by any sense of the word. It's a regular show. It's based off of a 48-hour film. So I think kind of always having that in the back of your head always kind of grounds you along the way working on this show. There was a few times where I would put a lot of hours into a design and I would get a note back saying like, just make it look dumber, and it'd be like, ah, yeah, I might have overthought that one, so.
What were some of your favorite memories of working on Regular Show?
There was an episode called High Score with Garrett, this character named Garrett Bobby Ferguson. And there was we'll call him a professional gamer. He was in a documentary called King of Kong, and he ended up like trying to sue Cartoon Network over a character that he thought was making fun of him or his legacy. And I always thought it was kind of funny because I was like, I really wanted to see a courtroom sketch of him pointing at the character and just like the judge and the jury just kind of, either laughing or just kind of cringing at him. So if there's any courtroom sketch people out there, hit me up. I would love to commission one. Let's see, another a really cool memory that I had was there was a Comic-Con. It was two, I think 2013, and actually the poster that you see behind me right here, I had designed like this almost like this Where's Waldo style poster, and they gave them out, and I think there's only, I don't know, a few thousand of them. But what was really cool is I was just kind of like walking around Comic-Con and you'd see people with their totes and that Regular Show poster sticking out, and like they literally just had no idea that I was the one that drew it, and I was just kind of like a character in my own poster, just kind of like lurking around with watching everybody walk around with my poster in their backpack. So that was really cool.
I remember that Comic-Con specifically, seeing videos of it online, and I was so jealous of everyone because I was here in the UK. I really wanted to be at San Diego Comic-Con. And I remember seeing that poster and just being like, right, let's see what I can find on the poster. And like, yeah, it was just really cool.
Yeah, it was fun. Honestly, I think that was like one of the first Comic-Con. I think that might have been the first Comic-Con I legitimately went to as well. Like prior to that, I'd kind of showed up and just hung out outside of Comic-Con, and that was like the first one where I legitimately like registered and got tickets. So it was really cool, really fun. I'm trying to think other awesome memories. You're showing up to work and then like you're seeing like Mark Hamill show up to voice Skips, and he's walking in through the alley. And other moments are like we randomly got like a or no, I don't want to say randomly, the studio got us a stick hockey machine because we have an episode called Stick Hockey, and we all got really really into stick hockey. And there was like these huge tournaments that we would do. The only problem is that game is really loud, like the puck smacking against the walls of the cabinet. It is very loud. And so like I felt really bad for the shows that would end up next to us. Like I think Steven Universe was there for a couple of seasons next to us, and you just hear us like yelling and like the pucks slapping around and stuff. But we had so much fun playing that. To the point now where when I go to arcades and I see one of those machines, I'll like post up and I'll wait for people to like challenge me, and I'm like, okay, let's go.
Well, next time I'm in the States, I'm definitely gonna have to try and track down an arcade with a stick hockey table because that's not a thing in the UK, and I only learn about it because of Regular Show.
Oh man, it's super addicting. And if you ever do come over here, there's a lot of really cool barcades for adults that, you know, they have all the old like pinball machines and cabinet arcade machines. It's really fun.
And you mentioned, of course, having the stick hockey table at Cartoon Network Studios, and because that building has since shut down, do you have any idea on what ended up happening to that stick hockey table?
Yeah, actually, it rests on the fifth floor of the Warner Brothers Animation Studio building, housed right next to J.G. Quintel's office on the new Regular Show Lost Tapes.
So it's still there in its rightful place.
It's still there.
Now, we have spoken about how you joined the show, but on the kind of inverse of that, you did leave the show after season 7. So I'm curious to know what kind of inspired that decision to leave the show.
I almost felt like I had done everything I needed to do for the show. And, you know, it was almost like a fever dream when I started the show. Everything happened so fast. And it's almost like I went through the show and I looked back, you know, 7 years had gone by and I was like, oh, wait, like I actually wanted to storyboard, you know, I'd kind of gotten swept up in the momentum of the show, which was great. But I think, you know, I didn't leave on bad terms. I think it was just I just artistically was needing a change, and you know, I was really happy with what I was able to provide, and you know, to this day, I still feel like, you know, regular shows like kind of thing that, you know, I think it should carry on, and it should always have some new blood and some new life put into it.
And since then, you have done storyboards for many different shows, including for Close Enough.
So I'd kind of I'd left, and then, you know, I'd made my way through, you know, several different studios working as a storyboard artist, and I'd kind of rolled off of one production, and at the same time Close Enough was starting, and just so happened that they needed a storyboard artist, and I was happy to fill that role.
So, in terms of storyboarding, how would you say boarding on those other shows differs from boarding for a regular show?
I would say that Regular Show is one of the funnest shows I've ever worked on. And that's, I'm not like, you know, trying to throw shade at other productions. It's just, I think it almost felt like Regular Show prioritized fun over trying to make things like work mechanically correctly, you know, or, you know, get really into the fine details and just like nitpick. Yeah, regular show is definitely a dream job. You know, I've worked on, you know, a handful of other shows, and every show kind of works differently. And that's one of the more challenging aspects of this career, is that you're kind of always like changing pitch and like kind of shifting gears and like moving into a different style and then jumping onto another production, and then they're expecting the same thing. So, yeah. And then just, you know, the dynamic of different personalities and different creative types. It's just, you know, it's always a grab bag of different obstacles that you have to deal with. So, yeah. But at the end of the day, as long as you're drawing, it's awesome.
And I know that a lot of the board artists came from doing comics, which I think really works in the show's favor because of how reliant the show is on the drawing. I think that's really great and very important.
Yeah, it's really cool. I really appreciated that JG did that, just finding really strong creative people to come onto the show and really just flesh the show out in different ways that were really awesome, like week to week, like looking at the episodes and just seeing like just the different creative inputs that were happening. It was inspiring and both motivating at the same time. So, yeah.
Just moving briefly back onto your role as a character designer, of all the designs which you did, which one, if you had to say, do you feel is your favorite, or is the one that you feel the most proud of?
Oh man. Yeah, I don't know. I had so much fun on so many of them. Party Pete. Gravesites, I had fun like designing all the zombies. A bunch of baby ducks. I wouldn't put that as the crown jewel, but all of those episodes were always really fun to do. Caffeinated concert tickets, the coffee bean, the lactating, coffee breasts. Man, I don't know. I honestly, like, I couldn't choose a favorite, but there's been so many along the way, for sure.
I think the coffee bean's a good call, actually. I think that image is like engraved in my mind. So, outside of the two episodes which you boarded, what would you say are just some of your favorite episodes from the show?
I really love Brain Eraser. I really love Party Pete. The Power, the first one. But yeah, I think those would land in like my top five. Fuzzy Dice, love that one. I just Brain Eraser when Mordecai sees Pops naked is just always a classic to me. I think I would hope that we all haven't had that experience, but I think we can all relate to seeing someone that naked that you wouldn't want to otherwise, and just having the feeling of wanting to like bleach it out of your brain.
I'm still amazed to this day that somehow you guys got away with putting that on a kids show.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, like I was kind of reminiscing over this the other day and just, reflecting off of the Cartoon Network building, kind of being dismantled and disbanded in a way. Like when I started at Cartoon Network, it was kind of at this weird transition where the heads of studio were kind of pushing this CN reel thing. Whereas like they wanted to compete with Disney and Nickelodeon, do these like reality TV shows, which for all the artists in the building at the time, it was sort of like a, all right, well, if you're gonna do that, we're just gonna like fuck off and do whatever we want. Like, I'm not saying that that was the sentiment of every artist, but like it definitely felt like the temperature, so I think at the time we all were just like, well, if you're phasing cartoons out of Cartoon Network, then we're just gonna have like the most fun that we possibly can. And like arguably, I think it was probably like maybe the most punk rock era of Cartoon Network, which was really fun to be part of.
And I mean, it's often said that both Regular Show and Adventure Time and maybe Gumball too kicked off this new golden age of Cartoon Network.
Yeah, I mean, it's really flattering that you say that. I don't know if that was even like the intention when we were making it. I think it was, we were all just trying to have fun and make cartoons that we would want our friends and family to watch and enjoy, really. And that all stems from kind of like our era at college too. In college, it definitely felt like there was two different camps. It felt like there's people who were trying to do like the meat and potatoes, like classic Disney style of animation. And then there was like the other camp that was just trying to make their friends laugh and, make shitty cartoons.
Just going back to Brain Eraser, I think my favorite thing to have come out of that episode specifically is the commentary track on the DVD. I don't know if you've heard it.
No.
It's basically like this really funny meta commentary where JG, Bill Sellers, and Sam Marion are all in character as Mordecai, Rigby, and Pops, and they're just reacting to the episode. And everyone's like grossed out, but Rigby's like having the time of his life. He thinks it's so funny.
So good. I gotta check that out now. And this is why we need to keep DVDs around. I mean, is that something that exists digitally too, or?
As far as I'm aware, no. It was only ever put on the season 2 DVD and Blu-ray, which is also part of the recent box set that they did.
Oh, cool. Right on. I'll have to check it out. Yeah, I have a bunch of the old DVDs, and I keep my old DVD player around just for all the just exactly what you said, all the behind the scenes stuff that like we don't get anymore, you know. So
What would you say are some of your biggest inspirations from other pop culture to do the things that you do?
oh man, yeah, that's so hard because I feel like there's been so many inspirational things along the way, pop culture wise. I mean, I think from an early age, just Beavis and Butthead, Mike Judge was like a huge inspiration. When I was a kid, we didn't have cable, but my cousin from the Bay Area would like burn all of the Beavis and Butthead episodes onto VHS tapes. And we just had like hours of Beavis and Butthead like on loop at the house at times. But yeah, along the way, I mean, we just collected everything, like, you know, even skateboard art. Like I love Jim Phillips and Ed Templeton, and my dad had a plethora of underground comics, you know, Gilbert Shelton, Freak Brothers, and Robert Crumb, and old, you know, 70s Mad magazines that were really inspirational. All the Far Side comics, and just, I mean, like, again, we just, I felt like I was just steeped in all of it, like all the old Simpsons episodes. Love those. I honestly, I couldn't pinpoint it to one thing. There was just so much that I feel like has kind of shaped and molded me and everything. So
Do you have any advice for people that want to get into the animation industry?
yeah, I'm really bad at giving advice, and I'm really just like, a big part of me just feels like I got lucky. But you know, I was definitely aiming towards being in the industry. It's kind of, you know, there have been times that where it's been hard to co-sign for this kind of line of work, just with all the ups and downs and the strikes. And in good conscience, I couldn't say, hey, you should definitely get into this. And I have done that before in the past. But, you know, with that being said, like, if there's somebody who's interested, like, seriously interested in animation, there's nothing that you or I can do to stop them. They're going to find their way in. Like, you know, I have these moments. I've had these moments ever since I got into the business. Like, you know, I got in at the end of a recession and at the beginning of CN Reel, and like, you know, it feels like this industry is constantly dying, even though it isn't. But I think, you know, if somebody wants to get into animation, there's nothing you can do to stop them, you know.
It kind of rings true with something I always see online where people get confused by, like, when Cartoon Network announced something, they're like, I thought Cartoon Network was dead, because they think that because the building shut down that the whole studio no longer exists. But I think that, you know, it definitely does feel like things are in maybe a weird state of limbo where it's always up and down. Especially with like all the AI crap that you see on social media. But I feel like there's always, no matter what, going to be that demand for real, authentic animation, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think there's always like an audience for it. And you know, honestly, like when I was getting in and I was going to school, like I went to school to become like a traditionally 2D pencil and paper hand-drawn animator, and that's the way I was taught. But simultaneously, like that was being phased out, and like th 3D animation was taking over. So ever since I kind of got into this field, like something has been dying. It's always dying, and the landscape is changing. It's just about shifting vectors and like trying to figure out what the next thing is. And like that's just the way it's always going to be. But with the AI stuff, it definitely, it's kind of a bummer that so many people are into it. And the thing that is though is like I feel like it'll have a shelf life. Like when you watch it, it doesn't really pass like the sniff test, like you see it and you're like, okay, I mean that's kind of interesting that it's creating some unique images, but it really is like the human behind the curtains that's kind of like orchestrating the direction that will be, the showcase. So yeah, I think it'll be fine. But I think some things need to be ironed out for sure. Like I don't want to get too heavy into the AI topic because obviously this is for regular show. But yeah, it definitely feels like, with all these systems training their programs on pre-existing art, it feels like we're witnessing like the biggest art heist in the history of humankind, and nobody really seems to care, which is kind of concerning. And it's like they're taking models, like just to use Miyazaki as an example, they're taking his style and using it to create filters to make money. It just feels like blatant theft to me. And from a person who didn't co-sign for that kind of behavior and action. So yeah, I hope some people get, screwed legally as a result of all this, but we'll see. I don't know.
Well, we're starting to come to the end of the interview now, but before we wrap up, I'd just like to ask if there's anything that you've been working on or that's coming up that you'd like to promote.
Yeah, so happy to say that I've come back to regular show Lost Tapes. So I'm really pumped and excited for the fans because some of the episodes that I've been seeing are really good, and it definitely seems like it feels like it's picking up where it left off. And even though I felt like at the tail end of the show, people didn't want it to be overcooked, but really the episodes that I'm seeing now make me feel like it should have never stopped. It should have just kept going, So I'm really excited for the final episodes, and I'm excited for the fan base to see them.
That's great to hear. I know that you probably can't talk anything about it, but I am super excited to see how it turns out, and I'm glad to see that JG is back working on stuff again after Close Enough was cancelled.
Yeah, we'll all heal with time. Yeah, no, all I'll say, but yeah, obviously I have a non-disclosure agreement. But what I will say is like just hearkening back to the question that you asked me, what my favorite episode is, I truly think it's one of the newest episodes that I've gotten to work on, and it centers around Eileen, and it's arguably one of the funniest episodes I've ever seen in the regular show universe. It's awesome.
I can't wait. And where can people find you on social media if they want to see more of your work?
Yeah, I'm pretty bad at social media. I just have Instagram and I pop on and pop off occasionally. But if you want to, stop in there, it's just Ben G. Adams. Pretty simple. And I don't have Twitter. I don't have X. It's just Instagram, and that's it.
That's great. Ben, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Pleasure to meet you, Jordan. And hope you all enjoy. And yeah. Long live the regular show wiki.
Thank you once again to Ben Adams for joining us for this interview. And watch this space for more news on the new regular show series. A link to Ben's Instagram will be available in the description. Next time, we'll be speaking with Eddie Wright, a comic writer who penned 5 stories for the ongoing series. Here's a preview.
There's a very large company that throws like a employee picnic, but it is the most absurd type of event I've ever seen. And like, it was just huge, and there was trapeze artists, and there were animals walking around on, you know, like exotic animals on leashes. And I put something in there where they race on little toilet cars. That actually was there. Yeah, it was really, really weird. It was a weird party.